RFP 2015.
Start your Saturday morning with a little swingin' country. The KBOO Swingin' Country program will be broadcasting live from the Tin Shed Garden Cafe on Saturday, October 24th from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. I know you've been hankering to put a face to those velvety tones, so here's your chance. You are welcome to come early, pull up a chair, and enjoy some coffee, food, and an earful of swingin' country. The Tin Shed Garden Cafe is located at 1438 Northeast Alberta Street in the City of Roses. Again, that's Swingin' Country live from the Tin Shed, Saturday, October 24th, here at your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
Yes, indeed. It is 11 a.m. on KBOO Portland, and the dirtbag is in the wing standing by, so you want to keep your dial right where it is because it's one of your favorite Wednesday morning shows with Glenn Andreessen and guest Jim Gilbert. Today, this KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from the Garden Spout, specializing in indoor gardening equipment, including horticultural lighting, environmental control, hydroponic and organic nutrients, and pest control. The Garden Spout is located at 4532 Southeast 63rd, just south of Foster in Portland. Information at 503-788-GROW. And by One Green World, a local nursery offering hard-to-find fruiting plants designed to help you grow your own food and decorate your yard, deck, or patio. To order plants or their 2015 color catalog, their website is onegreenworld.com, or you can reach them by phone at 1-877-353-4028.
Good morning. We have reached the second Wednesday of the month. It's time for the dirt bag. Good morning. This is Glenn Andreessen here beside you now until 12 noon. And back in the co-pilot seat is Jim all the way from Italy. Well, you've been back for weeks now.
Right, but I still think about it almost every day. It was such a great trip.
You sent me an email photo of the sunrise over Mount Vesuvius.
Amazing. There I was standing on the shore of Naples. What a beautiful scene. You know.
All right. Well, we'll hear more about that in the second half of the show. Today, we've got some other things to talk about. Our plant of the month is apples, and we'll give you a brief primer on apples, or Jim will, and I'll chime in there. And then we'll talk about our favorite varieties of apples, just a few, and things that you might be able to want to taste at the All About Fruit Show, which we'll talk about first at this main event coming up. We'll also talk about garlic, planting garlic, hardneck, softneck, storage, things like that. Too bad we don't have our garlic guru of the area, Chip Buebel, but I'll have to fill in on that. We do have a garden stumper that Jim brought back from us, a worldly garden stumper. I thought it might have something to do with Italy. That's a hint right there. I'll give you another hint. It isn't.
So that leaves only, 185 other countries? Could
That's
be
right. And cover crops. 'Tis the time, or it's getting ideal time for some, but past ideal time for some, but still not too late. The ground is relatively warm still.
We're still planting.
What we're missing is a lot of moisture in the ground. That's what we really want this time of year, or for planting. That's nice.
The other day, I was out checking out some soil, and this was before our last little bit of rain, but I don't think I've ever seen the soil so dry. It was like dust. It was just literally dust.
Yeah. Well, sounds like we're going to get more starting this weekend. And I mean,
I love the nice weather, but on the other side of it, I know we need to get this rain.
Right, yep. Right. Okay. And as I mentioned, Jim will talk about Italy and what he did there and plants that he found in the back, when he was there in the second half. Now, as always, please call us with your gardening questions if you have any, or statements, or favorite apples, 503-231-8187. Got some good tunes for us today too, Jim.
Great.
Of course, that's not unusual, is it? All right, All About Fruit Show. Okay. Home Orchard Society coming up this weekend.
This weekend. We're lucky to be on the air before the show, so listeners can be reminded of this. This is probably the signature event of the season for fruit nuts. Can you imagine any place that you would be able to try hundreds of varieties, not tens, but hundreds of varieties of apples and pears and quince and hardy kiwi and pawpaw and persimmon, and just like it's an incredible event and done virtually all by volunteers of the Home Orchard Society at the Clackamas County Fairgrounds in Canby, lovely Canby, Oregon, just south of Oregon City on Highway 99. It's both Saturday and Sunday from 10 to 4. Yours truly will be giving a talk on Saturday at 12:30. Because the talk was first titled about my trip to Italy, which really wasn't what I was planning on doing. I actually throw in a few pictures from Italy. And then I'll also talk a lot about growing unique and unusual and delicious fruit here in the Northwest.
I'll be there at the advice table.
You know, and I agreed to be there myself for a little while on Saturday morning, so we'll have some fun. And also, just to mention to people, parking is free there, which is great. And admission for Home Orchard Society member is $4, and non-members is $6. But if you join the Home Orchard Society, which I strongly encourage you to do, because we have a great publication called the Poem News, and you get that as part of your membership, then you get in for free.
Such a deal.
It is a great deal. And it really, you know, tell your friends and family and neighbors, because if you want to check out fruit, this is the place to do it. Mm-hmm. There's nothing like it else in the area, even in the Northwest that I know of.
It's worth the drive, even.
Yeah.
And it's a beautiful drive.
If you go out 99 from Oregon City, you drive along the Willamette River, great, very pretty.
Probably not the best bicycling on 99, but... There must be some route.
There isn't a lot of traffic on it, so I don't think it's that bad. Certainly on Saturday and Sunday, it's not going to be...
Getting through that tunnel at Oregon City, but...
Oh, right. I never thought about that.
Yeah. But nevertheless, so this Saturday and Sunday at the Clackamas County Fairgrounds in Canby.
Canby, 10 to 4.
Mm-hmm. Home Orchard Society, you can find more online. Homeorchardsociety.org.
That's right. Okay. Love to see you all out there.
That's right. And boy, you can taste as many as you want. You see an apple or a pear or anything that looks appetizing or the description sounds good, just ask the person with the knife and they'll cut you off a slice. And more often than not, they'll cut a slice off for themselves too. That's what I did when I used to do that. Yeah. I really like doing that.
And the other neat thing is you can go through there, and if you find something you like, bring your notepad with you, because then in the spring, when we do the spring propagation fair, you can come out and you can actually get a scion of that variety if there's something particularly unique you want, and get it grafted for you then, or take it home and graft it yourself so you can actually grow that fruit.
Yep. It's just a great organization and a great event.
Yep.
Two great events.
Yep. I strongly encourage folks to join, because we'd love to have you as part of this.
Right. Okay. Once again, just a reminder, if you have any questions, 503-231-8187. Let's talk about apples.
Yes.
And this, our stumper will have to do with apples.
Right.
So pay attention.
Yeah. Well, as apples are sort of like the, how would you say, the classic fruit, the one that everybody knows what an apple is. Some people don't know much about some of the other weird and unusual things, but apples have been around for a really long time. I'd say in the Western Hemisphere, they're probably the most widely grown fruit. And there are thousands of varieties. And with apples, like with a lot of fruit, the clue for having really good success with apples in our region is sort of some disease resistant. Disease resistant varieties, because you'll have a lot more fun with them than ones that are particularly prone. The worst disease we have here is apple scab, and at least from my opinion. And all the work we've done over the years to try to find varieties that taste good and grow well and are resistant or don't get that disease. That's been kind of our effort. So while there are thousands of varieties, of those, there's not so many that are resistant to scab.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you know, then when you talk about apples from beginning to end, you know, the early ripening ones. So a lot of people know what Gravenstein is. There are some other ones that are early ripening that are more disease resistant. Williams Pride is one, a fairly new one out of Purdue University. Another one that we've been growing for a long time, Wainuchi Early, is an excellent variety, originally from New York, but turned out to be a super one for the Northwest. And we found it up in Aberdeen, Washington.
Is there a Wainuchi Late or anything else, or that's just what it's
Wainuchi
called?
Wainuchi is all there is. And, okay. And from what I understand, I haven't been there very often, but in that area around Aberdeen, there's a Wainuchi River, and that's how it got named, by a man named Howard Hughes, who I met probably almost 30 years ago when I got this first science. Not the Howard Hughes of the airplane fame, but really nice guy. And so then, from early, and then you get into the mid-season ones, some like Liberty would be one of those Spartans, fairly mid-season. One of the best varieties for flavor and actually quite easy to grow here is Honeycrisp, which we can buy in stores. Which, you know, and people love it. Although when you grow it at home, you can even get it to be sweeter and more flavorful, if you can imagine that's even possible. But it's a really excellent variety.
And just as a little sidebar here, Honeycrisp was under patent for however many years one can patent a tree, but that has expired now.
That's right.
So it's legal for us to grow them.
Right. If you want to grow your own Honeycrisp, that's really totally okay, and you can propagate them yourself. Honeycrisp was actually from Minnesota, which is interesting.
It must be hardy here too.
I think it is. Yeah, I think it'll make it okay. And then you get into the really late ones. Like one of the about the latest that we grow here is a variety called Gold Rush, which at first I wasn't sure if it was even going to make it. It was so late, but it turned out to be an excellent apple.
How late is late?
Oh, you know, late October, mid to late October.
When they ripen?
When they ripen.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And then one of the things to watch out for with all of these kinds of apples are ones that are popular in stores but don't grow well here. And when I thought about Gold Rush, I thought about Granny Smith, which is a lot of people like the more tart flavor, but it's really not a good variety for us. It's so late that it doesn't really ripen in our area, and it's much more disease prone.
Yeah, and how would you know if it ripens anyway?
Oh, that's right. That's right. We should have Debbie a garden stumper, wouldn't we?
Yeah, right. Well, I'll just go back because we don't repeat our garden stumpers, but we did, one of the very earliest ones that I did was a garden stumper, that is what variety of apple is on the Beatles apple record label picture. I mean, everybody knows not everybody, if you listen to the Beatles when there was just discs, you know, it was a green apple that was the skin on one side and then a cut open apple on the other side, the B side.
Huh.
And what variety was that?
Did you actually know?
Yes.
Really?
Yes, Granny Smith.
Really?
Yeah.
Did the Beatles tell you that, or how did you determine
that? No, that was way after the Beatles. I think it was Paul that let me know that.
Ah. Well, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Granny Smith, I think, was originally from Australia. Not you know, the variety, not the person.
Right.
But, well, maybe the person was too, I guess. But anyway, you know, years ago when I was first getting into growing apples, I would read The Good Fruit Grower and some other commercial apple growing magazines. And the advertisements, I always thought they were sort of amusing and saying that they looked ripe 6 months before they were, or a significant amount of time before they were. So you could pick them 6 weeks, maybe is what I was thinking of, and then put them in cold storage and store them for a year. Now we all know what that kind of apple tastes like.
Yes.
Which,
you know. Well, is there a way that the commercial guys ripen fruit, ripen apples off the vine by pumping in whatever? Because we don't normally apples don't ripen off the tree. Once you pick them, that's it.
That's right. Well, I don't know. You know, I'm not that. I know that there are gases they use. I mean, ethylene gas. I don't know if they use that for apples in cold storage. I know they use CO2 to delay ripening in cold storage, so they can store them for so long. So
that's the key with what you were saying about the Granny Smith, but the Gold Rush being so late, or was it?
Gold Rush was the really late one.
Yeah.
It still ripens fine here.
But Granny Smith, I guess, was what we were speaking of, where it ripened so late that, or would it ripen?
Right.
And you would say, well, if it was a pear, well, just harvest it and let it ripen off the tree before it freezes. But not going to happen with the apples.
No. And this all goes back to the benefit of growing your own or getting things from a farm stand where a farmer has grown it and picked it when it's fully ripe. Local harvest, local production, local consumption. It's so much better. And I, you know, for our children's sake, I mean, they need to know what a real apple tastes like. You know, not a kind of the somewhat cardboardy ones that you can get in stores sometimes, or airplane food. I one time had a Red Delicious given to me on an airplane, and it was, you know, not a good fruit.
Gosh, what a surprise!
Yeah.
Well, this brings to mind how hard it is to put on a good fruit tasting show, because we've got apples. I don't know if there's going to be any Wainucci Earlys there to taste or not, or will there be any Granny Smiths or Gold Rush, because they're not ripe now. Well, maybe the Gold Rush could be. Now,
yeah, right? We knew if we had an early year this year, so I'm quite certain there'll be Gold Rush there. And I know that the Home Orchard Society volunteers have already picked a lot of fruit.
Oh, yes.
It's in refrigeration.
Months, right.
Yeah.
Right.
So I can't say for sure what varieties will be there, but there will be a lot.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, well, all this talk about apples and the Beatles leads right into my first selection here, although this is George Harrison. But, oh.
Passes-by all stuff like he had no place to go. But there's so much they don't know about apple scrubs. He'll be stood around the years, see my smiles and touch my tears. How it's been a long, long time, and how you've been on my mind, my apple scrubs. Apple scrubs, how I love you, how I love you.
Apple Scruffs from George Harrison's. Is that his first solo album? All Things Must Pass. Kate, you know? No. Well, it could be, but it's a double album, and it's a fine one. Fine one at that. Apple Scruffs. Well, I've got some favorite varieties of apples. I invite our listeners to call in with their favorite varieties, 503-231-8187. I don't know if I was, if I had to grow just one apple, it would be tough. Mm-hmm. Really be tough. I really like Gravenstein, and I like the versatility of that, that it cooks so well. Makes great pies and sauce, and I fresh eating as far as I'm concerned, too.
Great for cider as well.
Yes. Yeah. But there's some others that maybe have more complex flavors. I like Hudson's Golden Gem. It's a russeted apple. Yellow-green when it's ripe. Yellowish, I guess. Elongated apple. It's nice looking. Nice big strong shoulders. Yeah. What do you think? So far so good on that one, huh? Yeah. Hudson's Golden Gem.
Yeah.
I grow a couple of crosses between... I'm not sure exactly what the parentage. One's called, Spylicious and Spy Gold. So Northern Spy and maybe Golden Delicious and Red Delicious. They're both red apples, and I'm still picking them off the trees now to eat. What about you, Jim?
Well, I mentioned Wainuchi early is an early apple.
And that's a good flavor.
It's an excellent. Very nice flavored fruit, yeah. And William's Pride is very good, too. Those are two really good early ones for me.
I tend to like sweet apples. Maybe we should talk about how we categorize apples. I mean, it's not like pears or cherries where, well, pears does have variability. Cherries, a little bit, but they're all sweet except for the sour ones.
That's right, except for the ones that aren't.
Yeah.
Yeah, with apples, it's definitely there are definitely big differences between them, and like you said, there's the Rome Beauty type apples, you know, the very sweet ones, and then there's like I would say Granny Smith or in mm-hmm. most that category, which probably Gold Rush would fit into, which is much more a tartar apple. But for me, Honeycrisp, I know it's that's a commercial variety, but it's an awfully good one.
There's nothing wrong with. Necessarily commercial varieties because they're growing what people, well, you would hope that people are demanding. I mean, I don't think that people are demanding cardboard tasting red delicious apples, but
no, I don't think so.
But that's what oftentimes they get.
Yeah.
Yes, we have a first question.
Okay, it's Shirley Soton here in the air room.
Yes, Shirley.
I'm a Vermonter before I'm an Oregonian, and I just love Macintosh apples, and I don't see them here at all. Do they grow in the Northwest? And I'll take my answer off.
Sure.
You know, that's an excellent question. They don't. They grow them in Canada, in British Columbia, but it's not common. They're not common here. I think. Maybe there was some disease issues with them that just weren't as well adapted as some of the other apple varieties, but it didn't catch on. However, there is a way to eat a Macintosh apple here, which is to the columnar apples, which North Pole, Golden Sentinel, and Scarlet Sentinel are three really excellent varieties of apples that grow upright. Rather than growing out with branches, and I love them. I mean, they're really great because of their form, and you can fit them into the small spaces. And the North Pole is a Macintosh. It's
the North Pole columnar apple is a Macintosh.
It's a Macintosh, exactly. It's an actual bud sport of a branch on a Macintosh tree. So the apple is a Macintosh apple.
Okay, you got that there, Shirley. Okay. So that's a good thing to know. And is it a tartar apple, Macintosh, or
it's sort of in between?
Mid, okay.
Guess. Yeah, it's really a very nice flavor. Actually, I really enjoy eating them. And the Golden Sentinel and Scarlet Sentinel have Macintosh in them because they all came from this original bud sport.
Yeah, the ones that can grow on this. Columnar.
And make these columnar apples. Yeah. And I just was picking a whole bunch of Scarlet Sentinels. They're really good right now. I mean, they're just excellent fruit.
Okay, let's go to the phone lines. Good morning. You're with the Dirtbag.
Who's that, me?
Sorry, that is you. Yes. You're on.
Right. Hey, listen, two varieties you mentioned we used to have in New York, which was a big apple growing state way back when. And the Macintosh, but that wasn't a good keeper. But that Northern Spy, I think my grandfather said that was one that would keep all winter. Is that right, when you store them?
I cannot tell you that because they never get stored. I just eat them fresh. It's a small tree, so.
Oh, you got a small tree. Well,
yeah, I'm only getting 30 or 40 fruit.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, then you. And then what? How does that the Honeycrisp? Where would I get stock for that? I know that's a good apple. I've tasted it. I like it. And if I was going to have one apple tree, or you know, that's probably one I'd get for around here. Where would I get? What nursery do you pick them up at?
Well, One Green World is a good source for those, and I imagine that probably Portland Nursery and other local nurseries have them as well.
I would think so. If you're interested, as we mentioned at the top of the show, you can. If you're interested in building a tree yourself, is that the? Could that be a possibility?
No, I wasn't exactly. You know, I build houses, not trees. You know?
Well, I meant graft a tree, but I understand you're saying.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I mean, okay. I'm only one person.
Yeah. Okay.
So much.
Well, then we'll stick with those.
I missed the beginning of the show. So yeah. I didn't hear that. But no, I just like to put it in the ground, you know, get it ready, and then harvest the fruit in a couple of years.
That's as much
work as I want to do.
Very reasonable.
Okay. Great.
All right, so you say just go back to the, you know, Portland Nursery or 70s or something like that.
Well, or One Green World online or Rain Tree. There's I don't know, Rain Tree probably has it too. Plenty of places.
Yeah, One Green World is out on Southeast 134th, just off Foster, by the way.
Green World at 134th, 131st off Foster.
What? 134th.
Okay. I'll go look for that. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Keep up the good work. Keep up the good show. All
great.
Right?
Thank you very much.
All right.
Okay. Was it Christine?
Yes.
Good morning, Christine.
Good morning. Can you recommend a good espalier apple that grows in the Northwest?
Well, espaliering is just the technique that we would use to grow most varieties of apples. There are some that would not be suitable. So I have, I would have to just guess maybe 15 or so apples that are espaliered, which means I've just trained these to go on these wires.
Okay.
And so I know sometimes we go to a store and we buy an apple that's, you know, it says espalier, but what it really is, it's a tree, an apple tree that has been grafted. So the branches are kind of already in place, and they're just, you would put wires then and you're ready to go. But what I did was just grafted a fruit tree, and then it's pretty easy to pick the branches that you want where.
Okay.
So that's just a little clarification there. But Jim's going to jump in here.
There's a couple of options. You can have a tree of a single variety, and then cut it back so it sends out branches at the height you want. And that's it takes a little time, because if you imagine, let's say you wanted your first branches to be at 2 feet, you'd have to cut the tree back so that it would push branches out at that level. Otherwise, it probably won't. And then you have to choose a shoot that's going up, and then do it again when you get to the next height where you want branches. And so that would, if you're doing it on your own, you've got to force those branches to come out at those points. The other way, of course, is to buy an already espaliered apple, and typically you get ones that have different varieties. So you can have like 3 or 4 varieties on the same espaliered tree.
But I'm going to have to jump in here, and that, you know, it's my opinion, and I know others I don't recommend that, because one of those varieties is likely to overpower the others eventually, and it'll take more nutrients, and it'll just get bigger and bigger, and the other ones are just small.
But I'm gonna have to jump in here right now.
Yeah.
Sorry. But you know, if you're espaliering, you're doing more control of the size than if you have I've had that experience more with the combination trees that are not formed to do a certain thing. I mean, it certainly could happen with an espalier, but I think you're going to be doing a lot of pruning. Espaliering a tree is probably one of the most labor-intensive ways of growing apples.
But it's a way to get more varieties of fruit in a smaller space.
And make it very attractive.
Right.
Fencing almost with it.
But it's attractive because you've done the pruning.
That's right.
And you need to you know, not mind pruning.
That's right. Keep your pruner sharp.
Not what kind of? Say that again.
Well, you have to, you know, not mind pruning.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yes.
Yeah, you have to, right. You know, not necessarily that you have to enjoy pruning, but you're out there. And
yeah.
I've seen, you know, there are some varieties of apples that are just more vigorous than others. Mm-hmm. And I've espaliered apples and pears. And if I was going to do it again, or if just a beginner, I would only recommend espaliering apples. Because mm-hmm. the rootstock that we grow pears on is not nearly as dwarfing as apples. Mm. And that's the key there, is to have that small, the characteristic of small, the rootstock that gives you a small tree. And unless, you know, these pre-grafted, and I'll put espalier in quotes here, trees, you got to know what the rootstock is.
Oh.
Because there's nothing that's going to sour you on pruning faster than trying to get a tree that just will not behave.
Right. It's pretty important that the nursery be able to tell you the rootstock.
Yeah.
You know, like for example, M26 is a dwarf rootstock. If it's okay for espaliering. If a nursery has it on M111, these are names of type apple rootstocks, you've got almost a full size tree, and the vigor is going to be much greater and much more difficult to control.
You're fighting genetics.
Yeah.
So
can I paraphrase what you're saying? So yeah. I should know the root stock so that I'm getting a truly dwarf tree?
Yes.
Okay.
And if the names may not mean anything to you, but you can call us back whenever or send us an email at the dirtbag through the KBOO and say, you know, this nursery told me that it's on this root stock. Will that be suitable?
Okay.
And we'd be happy to say, yeah, or, oh, don't dare, don't you dare.
And I could quickly mention a couple that would just come to mind. Like I mentioned, M26 is a dwarf rootstock. M9 is another one. M27 is really dwarfing.
As is P22, which I use a lot right. of, but I never see that commercially.
Not common. Yeah. Years ago, we used to grow trees.
So the M27 is especially dwarfing.
M26.
M27 is very dwarfing. I think M26 would probably be a better choice because M27 is so dwarfing that it might take you longer to get the tree to where you want it to be.
Uh-huh.
And I want to just circle back around to that, how we're training the tree. What I did was I didn't prune the tree off because I have mine in a what's called a Belgian fence. And it's the branches go out at 45 degrees. You, Christine, you may be thinking of just horizontal branches.
Yeah, that's what I was. But, you know, I'm...
And it's that's fine. The branches are most productive at 45 degrees. And if all your trees are at 45, if you have more than one tree, then the branches start crossing and forming diamonds, which is attractive.
Mm-hmm.
But so what I did was I allowed that central leader to keep growing. And I have four wires on my training trellis. And so I had the first branches. They came out just kind of where I wanted them to. And sometimes they're not exactly going, you know, east-west. Sometimes they come out at northwest or whatever. And you can kind of push them around or pick another branch. But so there's ways to approach. There's different ways to approach this.
And there's actually books written on it.
Yeah. And then you can read several books and say, well, these kind of are contradictory of each other. And
I'll just buy my apples at the store.
Yeah. Maybe we need to put on a espalier tour.
There you go.
So that would people be, go around and yeah. see you at...
Yeah. That'd be interesting.
Yeah. I don't know the people. Maybe, Jim, we ought to think about a fruit tour mm-hmm. of the city fruit
that
growing.
That would be fun, wouldn't it?
It would. Yeah. All right. Well, Christine, maybe we confused you more than...
No, it's a good start. Thanks so much for your help.
You bet. Okay, well, we haven't gotten to garlic yet, but we'll do that after the... let's just take another little break here. This is going to send us into the garlic. This tune is going to send us into the garlic discussion here. This is Coco Taylor called Save Your Breath.
Welcome back. Why don't you just there yet. We're getting there. We're not there yet, though. Are we?
Hello?
Yeah.
Yep. Gone. What did you...
My mic's not on, so yours is.
Is mine on?
Yeah, so you got the show, Jim.
There we go. Now we're back there. Okay, well, let's head right into the stumper here, and we'll come back right after Kate's ready with our theme. We haven't heard our theme for a while. World Party. Okay, don't know who, don't know why, don't know what, whatever else he says there. Okay,
listen carefully.
Back to our Apple discussion.
Sure. Okay, we're ready for the stumper?
Yes.
All right. So, the largest city of what country is considered to be named after the Apple? What is the name of that country and what is the name of that city?
Yeah, this will send you to your geography books.
Might be Google. I don't know where people go anymore to get that information. But
yeah, if somebody has that in their head, that's darn impressive.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's it. What's the city and what's the what city is named after the
largest city of what country?
Oh, the largest city. Oh, that narrows it down then.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and you told me the name of this, and it has nothing in its name that says Apple or.
Not in our language.
Correct. That's the key right there. So it's not an English-speaking country.
It's not an English-speaking country. That's correct. That does narrow it down.
Yes.
Yep.
But not
real far.
No, it doesn't. It's not a giveaway yet.
Did I tell you that after our trip to Italy, I just haven't talked about it yet, but we got so inspired about figs and Italy that my partner Lorraine, is now studying Italian. And we want to go back there in June because we want to look at figs that we think might be good varieties for the Northwest.
Similar climates?
Well, it's hotter there.
Yeah.
It's fascinating.
Okay. Well, let's talk about garlic and then we'll talk about Italy.
Okay.
So. Well, I'll make my garlic short.
Well, it's very appropriate. I mean, yes. A lot of garlic is used in Italy. So.
Right. Yeah. So where garlic, this is the time that we generally plant it, October, ideal time. Harvest it June, depending on what the weather is. Cut the water off early in May. It works very well to plant garlic in a place where it's just you don't really need to give it any supplemental water, because about the time that our rains stop is about the time that the garlic is starting to bulb up nicely, and we don't want it to have much water. We want when you withhold the water, it will start curing itself, and that's what we want with garlic to be. Store a long time. So it does take sun, and choose a place that, or amend your soil so it has plenty of organic matter in it. Doesn't necessarily have to be it has to be fertile soil, but it doesn't need a lot of fertilizer. And you can mix fertilizer in when you plant, or you can certainly top dress it now and in the maybe April. I would choose varieties. I mean, there's so many varieties of garlic. If you're happy with a variety that you're eating now, even if you've gotten it at a farmer's market, that would be fine to grab those cloves and plant those. Okay, well, should we go to John here right away? John must have done his homework. Okay, let's take John. John, you got the answer for us?
Well, I think so. You said it was a non-English-speaking country.
Yeah.
Well, I'm guessing Manzanilla, Mexico.
Nope. Jim says no.
It's not that. That's not the largest city of...
of the country. That was another hint.
The largest city of what country?
I don't know what the largest city in Mexico is. Mexico City, probably.
Mexico City would be.
What, John, do you have a... John's gone. I wonder if they grow fruit there. I mean, apples.
Well, it's very possible.
Yeah. Okay. So, all right.
Still looking
for the city that's named for the birthplace of the apple or something like that?
Yeah. So basically the father of the apple.
Father, where apples apparently started.
Mm-hmm. That's a really good clue, by the way, you just gave.
Yes. Oh, sorry.
It's okay. There's no television set to be awarded.
Right. Okay. Yeah, we want somebody to get this. Okay, so back to garlic here. There are, you know, hard neck varieties, soft neck varieties, ones that are, you know, are thicker necks, thinner necks, and you can read the tags to see which ones may store longer, you know, or have milder flavor, or whatever characteristic that you want. I've grown the red varieties, Rosa. I've grown half dozen varieties, and they all grow pretty well. Some of them are bulb up bigger, and the size of the bulb is directly related to the size of the clove that you plant. You wouldn't just plant the whole bulb as one. You would separate them into cloves, and the larger the clove, the larger the bulb will be. So it's, you know, kind of save your best varieties. Excuse me, your best specimens there to plant your seed garlic. And generally, what I do is I'll put them in rows, and I don't necessarily dig a trench. I just put the clove in my hand and my fingers and just push it down up to about my second knuckle. One, two, between my second and third knuckle. Just push it down into the ground. That's it. So it's pretty, you know, you want your soil in good tilth, friable, full of organic matter. Cover it up, label it where it's going to be, and then throw some compost on top. It will start growing underground probably immediately. You'll see the green shoot come out in 2, 3, 4 weeks' time. It will grow from an inch to 4, 5, 6 inches, depending on what the weather is. It's pretty hardy. I have a photo of snow around garlic, but it will stop growing in December, January, but then it'll pick up again, of course, in February. And as I mentioned earlier, start withholding water when some of the outer husks are getting dry. The rule of thumb is, you know, when 3 or 4 husks are dry, they will. That's the time to pull. And you can, you know, test it just like we're testing apples to see if they're ripe by tasting them. Just pull a few up. You can always use it. It just means it wouldn't store very long that way. Some people will use the shoots. The scapes are the seed pod that will come up, mm-hmm. and you can cut those off and stir fry those or whatnot. And that doesn't seem to matter one iota to the size of the bulb. In fact, it's probably better. All right, probably doesn't make a difference. Okay, Sam, you're with the Dirtbag. You got a question or an answer?
Well, I got a guess.
Okay. What is it?
Moscow.
Okay, well, we don't know what language they speak, but...
Moscow, Idaho.
No, he was... Sorry, we cut you off. What's your answer?
Moscow, Russia.
Russia. Mm.
Well, you know...
Getting closer.
That is an excellent guess, although Moscow really isn't apple in Russian. So,
does that translate to something in Russian?
You know, that's a good question. I don't think so.
Okay. No.
Not that I know of, at least.
Yeah.
Getting closer.
That's right. We're in the neck of the woods, we'll say.
Yeah, right. At least perhaps we could call it the continent.
Okay. Right. We're narrowing it down here.
Yeah.
And it has to be the largest city. Is Moscow the largest city in Russia?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay, well, we don't know what language.
All right. All right. Well, we're getting some good guesses here. Birthplace of the homeland of the apple.
Yeah.
We think.
Yep.
Okay, so back to garlic then. What I do with garlic is store it I harvest it, but I don't take the husks off the stems off. I let them dry that way, but out of the sun, not in the field. And then, after a month or two, you can cut the stalk off and resist beautifying the garlic. You know, don't take off those husks. Leave as many husks on as possible. And then when it comes time to eat it or you take it into the house, do it. So that brings up storage. Well, you can store it, you know, down to 32, maybe even a little bit below 32. Same with onions. Onions are a little more sensitive to that. What I do is put them in my unheated detached garage. And then if it's going to get very cold, you know, below 25, between 20 and 25, then I'll put them into my basement. It has the furnace there, but we don't run that a lot. And so it remains 55 to 60. Unless the furnace is running, then it'll go up a little bit more. Good for storage there. Okay, David, you got the answer?
I'll take a shot at it.
All right.
I know they're from Central Asia, and I think the capital of Kazakhstan is, I believe, Almaty.
You got it.
That's it.
Ding, 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 ding.
Okay.
And it actually, interestingly, I did a little research in this myself because I thought that was the capital too, but they actually changed the capital a few years ago. So it's that's why I say the largest city. I didn't say the capital.
Gotcha.
But Almaty is the answer. And it roughly translated, most people think it means father of the apple. Kazakhstan is considered to be one of the countries where apples originated. And I haven't been there myself, although I've been nearby, but people have gone there, and it's pretty remarkable what you find walking around in the forest where we have Douglas firs and big leaf maples. They have apples.
And these are probably smaller apples?
Sure. I haven't been either. My brother's been, but only to the cities because he was teaching economics and or consulting on economics and so I only know a little bit about Kazakhstan. I have some textiles from there, and then I probably saw on some educational TV show about how apples originated in Central Asia. And so I got lucky there. So do I win anything?
You bet. You win self-esteem.
The respect of all of the other listeners who didn't.
I was calling for, that's basically, I was calling because I knew the answer, but I didn't hear the lead into this whole thing. So I could have been won some incredibly valuable prize like, an apple tree pruner or something like that.
Yeah, that would be nice. Right. But
how about an invitation to the All About Fruit Show?
We could even arrange a free admission.
To a free show?
No, to the All About Fruit Show.
Sure.
You know, did you hear about that? We were talking about it earlier.
I only tuned into this show in the last 5 minutes here. So
it's not exactly Kazakhstan, but out in Canby.
Canby? I had a great time in Canby at the Flock and Fiber Festival.
Oh, I heard about that. I have a friend who went there.
Was it at the fairgrounds?
You betcha.
Yeah, that's where this is, too.
Come on back. This coming weekend.
Oh, really?
Saturday and Sunday, the All About Fruit Show. You have tables and tables covered with apples. They're not on the tree anymore, but you can taste them and see them and a lot of other fruit as well.
And if you stay on the line, maybe you could give your name to Kate, our engineer. And then if we think of it, we'll say, hey, let this guy in for free.
Okay.
Do you have that much pull, Jim?
I'm not sure if I can do that.
You're a board member here.
Yeah, right. I'll get me in trouble here. but certainly to identify yourself, that would be great.
Yeah. Right.
Well, I'll stay on the line.
Sure. Okay. Yeah. Kate's ready for that. Yep. She says, yes, she is. Okay. Good job. Okay. Well, that's enough garlic talk. Let's hear a little bit about what were your highlights there in Italy.
Italy, that's right. Well, I went there because there was a fig symposium.
Oh yes.
And I came back knowing more about figs than I ever thought possible. And it's an amazing crop there. I mean, figs are all over the place. I mean, there's lots of small companies that make fig treats of all sorts. We brought back chocolate covered figs within which there are citron peel and almonds. There are dried figs made into a kind of a ball wrapped up in fig leaves, and they make fig molasses. And this fig ball was incredibly good. I mean, it was just
like a dessert.
Really excellent. Dried figs everywhere. I mean, people people doing this. I mean, it was very impressive. Some of the things that were highlights of this, of course, was the conference itself. We met people from all over the world. I mean, there were folks I met a guy from Iran, which was kind of neat.
Huh.
Tunisia, Portugal, Israel, Turkey. A lot of folks from Turkey came, people from China.
How did they do the presentations on this? Do they have translator thingies?
It's all, you know, one of the small benefits of growing up in an English-speaking country is that English is the sort of language of science, and this was put on by the International Society for Horticulture Science, and so the language of the symposium was English. So we didn't have any problems with that. But of course, the other folks had to work with it because they didn't. That wasn't their native language. But we all worked on it together and understanding each other. It was a great trip. There was a lot of parts of it that, as I said, besides the fact that we had all these treats that we got to eat and meeting all these great people, there was all this information. And then we were staying for a week in Naples, which some of the listeners may have been in Naples, but it's a pretty beautiful city, right? And we stayed really close to the water. So every morning and evening, we'd be walking along the waterfront. They'd blocked off this main boulevard. So it was a very pedestrian friendly place. A beautiful spot and lots of pizza to eat. Very tasty pizza. Then after a week in Naples and doing some touring, we went across the country from the west side, which Naples was on. This is southern Italy, to the east side on the Adriatic Sea to a town called Bari, B-A-R-I. Bari was very interesting to us. We went to the old part of town, which reminded me of Italian movies I used to see years ago with these people living in apartments that are probably 1,000 years old.
Wow.
And just hanging out on the streets and kids playing in the dark. I mean, nightlife there is amazing. And we were kind of struck by the fact that people don't even think about eating dinner until 9 p.m. or later.
How warm was it?
It was warm. And Naples was hot. It cooled off a little bit by the time we got to Bari. And I can't sadly show folks a picture on the radio, but another very interesting thing about the Bari area were these houses made out of stone called a trullo. And they are ancient houses, hundreds of years old, and basically made out of rocks with no cement, no mortar, built with a circular lower level and then a conical roof. And they're built in such a way that they actually will shed water. Of course, they're not airtight because they're just rocks laying on top of rocks, but fascinating. And they restore them and people live in them too. So it was really, it was great. And like I said, we want to go back because we discovered, and we knew this sort of already, but there's a type of fig that we grow here. The variety, the primary variety here in the Northwest, I think I would recommend to anybody who wants to grow a fig is Desert King, or King, which is actually really the original name was just King. And the King fig is a San Pedro type, which means that it bears its fruit on the old wood that grew the previous year and doesn't ripen a second crop unless it gets pollinated. Or it's funny, occasionally you might get a ripe fig in the second crop, but you very rarely get that. And that first crop, the Braba crop, they call it, is so strong and so good that it makes it just an excellent, reliable to do.
Yeah.
Very good. So, but that's the only San Pedro type that I know of in the Northwest.
Oh.
So we now are inspired to find some others. I know there's some in California, and hopefully we'll be able to get them up here.
What variety is the Laterella or the
Laterula and Vern's Brown Turkey and Black Spanish and all those are called common figs, and they bear their main crop on the current season's growth. That's why they're particularly valuable to us because they ripen early enough in the fall that we can get a good crop. But there's a lot of varieties that they grow in California, like Codota and Black Mission and stuff. They're more difficult to ripen here because we don't have enough heat for
them. Yeah, that would be great if we had, San Pedro?
San Pedro type.
Types, yeah, right. Uh-huh. Okay.
So pretty excited about it. And we actually want to put in a small orchard and grow some for fresh figs. The fresh fig, not the dried fig.
Yeah.
You can go right now to stores and you can buy fresh figs from California, but they're not ripe because you can't ship a fully ripe fig.
Right. So if you had that.
Not so good.
Okay. Well, we'll go to our, give you a taste here of, this is just a little backstory here on my next selection here. This is Box, Italian concerto, but this is interpreted by a man by the name of Jacques Lussier, a French pianist who is, has put his spin on Bach is when he first started, but he's done, you know, Vivaldi and other classical composers, just a one heck of a pianist. And I'd heard of him. In fact, there's some of his music here at KBOO when I used to do Don Concert, play some of his kind of bending genres there. And he's just an excellent pianist and works with a trio generally. And this is his interpretation of this Bach's Italian Concerto, just one, a little bit of a movement.
Nice.
Yeah, he's got some chops. Jacques Glusier. I saw him in concert in Potsdam, Germany. Excellent concert.
I was in Potsdam, Germany.
Yes.
Two years ago.
No, I was there 12 years ago.
I didn't hear him.
Okay, well, speaking of taste here, we do want to mention a little bit about cover crops here, but Jim brought in some American persimmons. Those are large American persimmon.
Yeah, this is a really new, this is a variety we call Prairie Star.
And
we got it from a collection in Illinois, which was really the American collection, American persimmon collection, the most significant one in the U.S. And this is a Native American fruit.
Yes, well, the natives that I've seen, because I have one kind of in my neighborhood, mile and a half away, that I've seen, they're small. I mean, they're quarter size or something.
This is excellent, isn't it?
Yeah, that's a good 2 inches in diameter. Squat.
Yeah.
Soft. Not going to taste it right now, but I will. I just want to mention cover crops briefly. Don't delay. We can plant annual rye up until, mid-November, but it's not a legume. And I'm really pushing legumes because they fix nitrogen, as we say. They add nitrogen to the soil, and nitrogen is always at a minimum. It's water-soluble. Plants use a lot of it, and I've heard when you do a soil test that sometimes they don't even do nitrogen because they know you're going to need it. Is that true, Jim? You ever had a professional soil test done?
Yes, yeah. But not so much for nitrogen.
Yeah. Well, see, there. That's my point exactly.
Yeah, right.
No. So anyway, fava beans, my favorite, crimson clover, fine. Those are the two that I recommend. I don't necessarily recommend vetch, although that's a legume, Austrian field peas, grid, good. Both, all of those are legumes.
We're actually using vetch this year.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, the reason that I don't necessarily recommend it is because if it goes to seed, you've got lots of vetch coming up for years. But you won't let that happen.
Let that happen.
No, you'll disc it in.
That's right.
Or mow it in. I don't know what you do.
Yeah, we disc it in. Uh-huh. And we believe, based upon what we've studied and learned from our neighbors, is that we can actually supplement nitrogen to such an amount that we won't need to use manure.
Incredible.
Yeah.
See, that'll do. You can do the homework on it and see how many pounds of nitrogen per acre, 100, 150 pounds. Okay, we're out of time, Jim.
It's been fun.
It's great to have you back. We'll be back here, let's see, November 11th.
Yep.
All right.
Look forward
to it. Glenn Andreessen, thanks for listening. That's my story so far. My own horse is weary, but sincerely I believe.
And this KABU program has been made possible in part by KABU Foundation members and a grant from Deacom Street Doorway, a Linton feed and seed store offering essentials for farm life in the city, including animal feeds, garden and landscape plants from local farms and nurseries, and seed garlic. Open Thursday through Sunday, 10 to 5:30 at Northeast Deacom and 8th. Entrance on 8th. DeacomStreetDoorway.com. And by Grendel's, a neighborhood coffee house offering organic coffee, sandwiches for breakfast and lunch, and Wi-Fi. Proud to support KABU. Grendel's is open every day at East Burnside and 8th. Information at 503-595-9550 or facebook.com/Grendel's Coffee House. And thank you for listening to the Wednesday morning radio zine. Stay tuned now. We'll have noon news headlines followed by Nick Gass.